I think I was in third and fourth grade when I had a music teacher named Mrs. Stagner. And we met in this kind of like narrow, long room, and on the long side had these like built risers where these little third and fourth graders would sit, and it was carpeted, and she had a little keyboard at the front. And when I was in third and fourth grade, whenever we wanted to do any sort of multimedia, you had to request the rolling TV. And so Mrs. Stagner had requested our rolling TV, and for, it may have just been one day, but for what felt like a long time, we went over this piece of music called Peter and the Wolf. Okay, good. That's so helpful. That's so helpful that some people recognize that. So if you're not familiar with the piece of music, Peter and the Wolf, it's an orchestra piece. And it's, I think it's a children's story. It also might be kind of dark. But it's very dark. Okay, but in this piece of music, every character is represented by a different instrument. And the reason that they play this for third and fourth graders is so that you can start to learn that different types of instruments and different sounds in music are associated with emotion and associated with either building up excitement and tension or like having a release of tension. And so following these characters through this story by listening to the birds that are the flute, or Peter, who's the main character, he's all of the string instruments. So you hear him kind of like skipping around. There's a cat that's a clarinet. And if you are familiar with music, I tried to find one of those apps where I could like play each instrument, but I had to pay for it, so. There's a grandfather, and he's a bassoon, which is like a really low instrument. So anytime you hear the bassoon, you knew that the grandfather was entering the space. Then there's the wolf, and it's this really haunting. It's three French horns, and they're playing in harmony together. And so you hear the wolf approaching, right? And then there's the hunters who have their rifles, and they're hunting the wolf. And they're these big drums. And then they hit the big drum, and that you know that a gun has been shot, right? So Peter and the Wolf, I remember this, and Mrs. Stagner would pause it and try to explain it. But I feel like just by hearing the music, you can imagine what's happening. You know that Peter is skipping or that something is getting tense. Why am I talking about Peter and the Wolf? So during Lent, all of our stories are going to be from Mark. And we just finished a series talking about how the Bible is meditation literature, and it has a lot of themes in it. And so most stories that are written have these themes and emphasis that we can track. And by doing that, we learn things that we wouldn't otherwise learn if we didn't look for the themes. So throughout the entire book of Mark, there is this consistent drumbeat. There is this one word that is used over and over and over and over and over again. It's used 40 times, nearly 40 times. And it is this word. Uthus. Pretty sure. Sharon?
Sure.
Sure.
Why not?
This is the word that is setting the pace of Mark. And most of the time, this word is translated immediately. So the word immediately is used in Mark 30 to 40 times. This happened immediately, and then immediately, and then immediately. And you get the sense that things are happening very quickly. If you read the book of Mark, it feels like it's all happened in like 36 hours based on, and that happened right after that. Nobody is sleeping, hardly ever. So this word is used 58 times in the New Testament, and 41 of those times are in Mark. That's 70% of the uses. The very first time that this word appears in Mark is in the first three verses. It's almost like it's a theme. And it was, and just as it was written about in the prophecy of Isaiah, "Look, I am sending my messenger before you. He will prepare your way." A voice shouting in the wilderness, "Prepare the way of the Lord. Make his path uthus." But in this place, it's translated straight. This is one of the only times that in Mark is translated as straight. Most of the other times it's translated immediately. What we see here is that what is communicated is a directness. Directly, immediately, in a straight fashion. The voice of one crying in the wilderness, "Prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths direct." And then in Mark 1:12, it says, "Immediately the Spirit drove Jesus out into the wilderness." And then Mark 1:28, "And immediately his fame spread all throughout the region around Galilee." And then Mark 10:12, "In those days Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. And when he came up out of the water, immediately he saw the heavens being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove." In ancient biographies, when Marquette was talking about the Gospels, it's not so much then they were born, and then this was their childhood, and then this happened next, and then this was their next accomplishment. It's more to convey the essence of the person. What is essential about this person's life? What did their life mean? In that Bible verse, who's got it? I need to borrow it. Can I borrow that one? In our Bible verse for this series, Mark 10:45, "Whoever wants to be first among you will be the slave of all, for the human one did not come to be served, but rather to serve and to give his life to liberate many people." The theme in Mark is that Jesus is a servant. And when a servant does something or is told to do something, they do it immediately, if they are a good servant. So we see all throughout Mark, Jesus doing things immediately, as if being sent, as if being told, this is what you should do. We also see other things and other people doing things immediately, directly. There is a servant of a king who is ordered to kill John the Baptist, and he does it immediately. There are two different instances where either a pig or a human has a demon, and Jesus tells that demon to leave, and it leaves immediately. And then there are leaders that whenever Jesus says something, they have an immediate reaction, either of fear, or they are immediately offended, or they immediately go to discuss it together. And in every one of these instances, what we're seeing is, who are they serving? Who do they see is sending them? The servant serves the king, and so he does that immediately. The demon recognizes Jesus' authority and does it immediately. And the leaders are a servant to fear or their own pride or each other. And they do that and they act immediately. 41 times. So how should we describe Jesus in the book of Mark? Jesus is resolved. He is singularly focused. He is headed towards the thing that he has been told to do, no matter what that is. The next thing that is supposed to happen, he does it immediately. So we see Jesus as this resolute, resolved servant of God in Mark, on a mission, moving forward despite opposition and despite uncomfortable situations. So the next several weeks, we're going to be talking about the teachings of Jesus in between this moment that Matt read about, where they turn towards Jerusalem. So in between this moment and the crucifixion, we're talking about the teachings of Jesus in that part of Mark. And he is setting his face towards Jerusalem, and he encounters many uncomfortable situations. And the stories that we're talking about are the ones where Jesus turns the tables or tells the wealthy people that the widow gave more than they did. We're going to see these teachings of Jesus where he's acting immediately. These themes, they're like the Peter and the Wolf musical refrain. So Jesus is this melody, this driving forward pace of the song. But we also see these other characters. We are often seeing the reactions of the followers and the disciples of Jesus as well. We see that to Jesus's resolve, to his mission, there are mixed reactions. And in our passage today, we saw that. It said that some the disciples were amazed and the others who followed behind were afraid. Amazed, the version that Matt read said astonished. What? Astonished, amazed. They all have the essence of, I'm seeing something I cannot fully understand. I don't really understand what's happening. It's like rubbernecking a little bit. What is going on over there? We see throughout Mark that the followers of Jesus are often missing it, or they're misunderstanding, or they don't know what Jesus is up to. Another common reaction of the people around Jesus is fear, being afraid. Have you ever been in a situation where the person in charge is very confident about something that you are not confident about? That's scary. The thing that I'm thinking about is like a skydiving instructor, where you're strapped on and they just jump out of the plane and you're like, okay, here we go. I hope you know what you're doing. When I was learning to drive, there was this one man who his profession was teaching driver's ed to high schoolers, and his name was Ed, conveniently. And so we had driver's ed with driver Ed. And he was everything that a high schooler wants a teacher to be. He was a little bit profane and a little bit sarcastic and a little bit over the top. And it was exactly what you needed to remember everything that that guy said. But the thing that I remember most about driver Ed is him teaching us how to get on the highway, which is a very scary thing, especially when he said that there were BFTs, big effing trucks, is what he said, which big freaking trucks is what that means. So driver Ed is trying to keep us safe, and what he says is you got to put the pedal all the way to the floor. That takes some confidence. You can't be one of those people who's getting on the on-ramp and like, oh, I've changed my mind. So you're in this car where driver Ed has a brake on that side, and he's just like, do it, do it, do it. And you're like freaking out, right? And all these cars are going fast, and you just gotta do it. fear when someone who is in charge has a level of confidence that you do not share. That is what the disciples and the followers of Jesus are experiencing when Jesus is doing things immediately that they have a lot of hesitation about. We see this mixture of fear and astonishment in chapter 4 when Jesus calms the storm. The disciples are in the boat and Jesus is sleeping. And a furious storm breaks out and the waves are breaking over the ship and it's nearly filling with water. And he's sleeping in the front of the boat on a cushion. And the disciples wake him up and say, "Don't you care that we drowned?" And he got up and he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Be still." And the wind immediately died down. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you afraid?" And they were in awe and terrified and said to each other, "Who is this, that even the wind and the waves obey him?" This mixture of fear and astonishment. There's another theme throughout Mark as we see Jesus resolutely walking his mission. There's a theme to follow me. Jesus is going. Are you coming? Whether or not you come, Jesus is going. In Mark 1, 16 and 17, he's calling his disciples, and he says, "Follow me, I will make you fishers of men." And immediately, they laid down their nets and followed him. And then, at another place, he calls the crowd around him, along with his disciples, and says, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me." And then here in Mark 10, where we are today, just before the passage that we read, Peter says, "Look, we have left everything to follow you." What I love about the passage that we're reading today is it encompasses all of these elements. The very beginning of the passage says that Jesus was walking ahead of them. Jesus is going. And they were filled with awe and overwhelmed with fear. And then he tells them what's going to happen. He's going to be turned over, he's going to be beaten, and he's going to be killed. But after 3 days, he will rise again. Here's what's going to happen to me. This is where we're going. Are you still going to come? So at that moment, every time Jesus says what's happening next, they have the chance to turn around or keep going. These themes play out over and over and over again. Like Peter and the wolf, we begin to see how Jesus is setting out, and it causes some upset and some fear. And then you see the people who decide to keep stepping forward, keep going forward. Over and over and over again, like a piece of music where the chorus just keeps repeating in the same song. Every story we hear over the next several weeks won't necessarily be focused on these themes, but they are placed in this context. This is what's happening around these stories. Jesus is encountering people, and he's encountering situations, and he's immediately doing what needs to be done. And it causes a mix of reactions to the people around him, ultimately ending up in him being murdered. At the end of Mark 16, we hear of Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday. And I'm not going to tell you anything you couldn't already know. So I just want you to know that right now. All right, Mark 16. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they could go and anoint Jesus' dead body. very early on the first day of the week. Just after sunrise, they came to the tomb. They were saying to each other, "Who's going to roll the stone away from the entrance for us?" And they looked up, and they saw the stone had been rolled away. It was a very large stone. Going into the tomb, they saw a young man in a white robe seated on the right side, and they were startled. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He isn't here. Look, here's the place where they laid him. Go, tell his disciples, especially Peter, that he is going ahead of you into Galilee. You will see him there, just as he told you." Overcome with terror and dread, they fled from the tomb, and they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. If you read in your Bible, in Mark, there are verses that follow this that talk about them meeting up with Jesus and getting instructions of how to go and spread the good news. But what you also see is this right here. You see this little bee? In your Bible, it has this. And it says, that the most critical or the earliest editions of the Greek New Testament end right here. They end by saying they were overcome with terror and dread. They fled from the tomb. And they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. The end. That is not a very nice ending. No wonder that the later community added more information to that. Yeah. It looks bad. They didn't say anything to anyone because they were afraid. But this, as far as the oldest manuscripts that we have found of Mark, this is where the book ends. Why is that? Why would the writer end the book that way? It's like a piece of music that's been cut off at the end. Have you ever heard or seen that game show where they play the song and then they stop it and you have to like fill in the next 7 words to win a prize? Yeah. Think about the audience of this book of Mark. What about, have you ever heard of the show How I Met Your Mother? So I haven't watched that show really. I just know the premise is that there's a father explaining to his son how I met your mother. And what is implied in that show is that at some point you did meet the mother, right? Because the son exists. And in the same way, this book of Mark is addressed to a Christian community. And so something happened in between. Something happened in between them leaving afraid and telling no one to there being a Christian community. It's like that phrase, "and the rest is history." That phrase means that it is, what happened next is so well known it's not worth repeating. You've heard it before. We've talked about these themes in Mark, where Jesus is heading out. Jesus is resolute on his mission. There is a response of fear and astonishment and not understanding what's going on. This has all of those. Don't be alarmed. You're filled with terror and dread. And look, where is it? He is going ahead of you into Galilee. Jesus is going ahead into Galilee. So if we know this song, what's missing? If we know what is missing, we can imply, ooh, I am going ahead to Galilee. Are you coming? Despite the fear and the misunderstanding, are you coming with me? Maybe that is why the writer of Mark ended the way that he did. Because even though this community may have known what happened, for every person who reads Mark after that, they see this invitation that Jesus is out there somewhere and is asking us to come. Are we going to go? Or are we going to run away in fear and say nothing? Let's pray.